I like the Russian inflection you put on the comrade.
До свидания, butthole.
Means goodbye.
This is my best friend, Comrade Bogarov.
Way to start the episode.
Oh, that was brilliant.
We're back, everybody.
Yeah, we are. We are ready. We're back.
Yeah, season three, here we are. I gotta say, I love what Goblin and Blasphemous have done. We've got our... We're an official nerd podcast. We're wearing our ironic t-shirts, you know?
Mad Monkey.
Yeah, we got our Mario plushies to show that we can relate to the fans. We've all got our Hogwarts houses, so you know we're official nerds now.
Fuck yeah,
Hufflepuff!
Dude. Slytherin for the win!
Ravenclaw. House of Voldemort. There we go.
Nerd!
House that can't be named. Duh.
That's why you're always going,
All right, so I guess our topic this week for all the gamers who are going to be listening to us on not only just Podbean, but hey, iTunes now.
Woo! Oh, We're official now.
We are legit. So our topic this week is running your game, whether it's Dungeons & Dragons, Superhero, Rifts, GURPS,
Vampire,
or if you want to do it old school, Cinnabar.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a great game. Not really. So we're going to be doing whether or not you want to run your game freeform, improv style, or if you actually want to plan out every damn detail. So until then, it's time for our intro?
Yep.
Okay, intro. Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
Okay, guys. So, it is I, Game Goblin, sitting at the beginning of Season 3 with...
Darth Blasphemous.
The moniker.
Kazokan.
Wow, you guys are so...
Original?
No, it's just thematic.
There's nothing wrong with a theme.
Talk about overacting in high school drama. Damn. Kazokan.
Oh, well, the full title is Kazokan the Lore Dragon, if you must know.
What was that in English?
The Lore Dragon.
Oh, okay.
The Lure Dragon?
The Lure?
Har har.
Now, we're just fucking with you, mate. In season 3, we get to be dumbasses again. All right, so today's topic is actually brought, and I don't want to make this personal, but a former colleague of mine was running a panel at Con, and I happen to be walking down the hallway, and I hear this dude ask a very legitimate question, which is better, running your game improv style, you know, just winging it, or, you know, do you plan out as many details as possible and run your game that way? The response I got from the former, I didn't get the response, actually.
The one you heard?
The one I heard, because I was just actually, like, standing kind of by the door. I was like, oh, what's going on in this room? The advice I heard is probably for a GM to another GM, some of the worst I've ever heard. Oh, just wing it. Wing it all. Yeah, by the look that Blasphemous just made, yeah, exactly. That's... I got burlap over my face, and I think that facial expression actually got through the burlap to other people in the room, because I was just like, what the fuck? No, don't wing it all.
I mean, as the FNG GM still, I'm only in, my third, fourth year of GMing?
Fourth year.
Yeah. I mean, I've listened to a lot of other GMs, taking a lot of advice. I was at a couple of those panels at Con, just sitting in the crowd, getting as much information as I could. And, you know, the most advice I've gotten is have a plan and don't be married to it, you know. Don't realize your players are going to move off into other things, so have something else you can improv or slightly prepared, but it's always good going with a plan, man. I mean, I have 100 pages of outline, and that's all it is outline. I fill in the blanks as I go, so it's partly fill in the blank improv. Part of it is, all right, there's an actual structure here. I just got to add all the colors as we go.
A semi-structured.
Yeah, because I think that's the best middle ground.
Part of it is that your players won't go in the fucking cave you're trying to direct them to.
I had to throw 33 wards at them. They killed one, surprisingly. But yeah, they wouldn't go into the dungeon. What gamers don't want to go into the goddamn dungeon?
Smart ones.
It's storyline necessary because they're basically running in the tutorial mode right now.
One of the best things that I ran across early when I was gaming, this is probably about, 15, 20 years ago almost. No, 15. Wait, when did 2001 happen?
18 years ago.
18 years ago? Okay, yeah, so this happened 19 years ago. I'm being legit here, guys. Don't stare at me like that.
I'm just waiting for you to go on.
Okay, anyway, there was this really awesome shop down the street from where I was living down in Lake City called American Eagles or something like that, and he had all of the Rift books. All of them.
Oh, my God.
And I was making mad money at the time because, well, the economy didn't tank yet. And so I'd go in there like every couple of weeks with like $400 in hand and just buy a shitload of Rift books. You know, nice. I just walk up, grab like 5-6 books that I wanted, throw them on the counter, and be like, I want these this week. You know, it was really awesome. So I had like, by the time I moved out of Seattle, I had over $3,000 invested just in Rifts, which running Rifts is a lot different than playing Rifts because it is not a GM-friendly game, but to the point, there was one of the deals in one of the GM books that Symbieta wrote that I actually agree with. And I can't believe I just said I agree with something that Symbieta wrote. There's this booklet called Hook, Line, Sinker Adventures. You have the hook, you know, the thing to lure your players into the game. So CyberDoc wants to get more fleshy parts for his, you know, services, but he's willing to pay the characters really good. Then you have the line, which is the adventure itself, you know, to reel them in. So, you know, that's the bulk of the adventure. And then the sinker turns out to be like, hey, the CyberDoc is evil. You can still get your money, but you got to trash his shop. But unfortunately, at the same time, the sinker is he actually provides services to the downtrodden. So it's a bittersweet victory. And there was a lot of these hook, line, sinker adventures in there. And that's kind of how I developed my style of doing guideposts. And yeah, it's kind of planned, but at the same time, it's freeform. So when I hear somebody go, hey, should I run a game improv or should I do it planned? I'm like, ¿por qué los dos?
¿Por qué no los dos?
Oh, ¿por qué no los dos? You know, why not both? So when I do the guideposts, I have, you know, the beginning of the game, getting the characters together. And then from point A to point B is really ambiguous. But I'm going to throw in a few nuggets here and there to keep the players, you know, string them along to the next guidepost where the more storyline stuff happens. And then I throw out more little nuggets of stuff and they follow the, ooh, piece of candy trail. And ooh, they get to the, yeah, ooh, piece of candy, exactly. So to keep the game going, I just throw out pieces of candy. But if the players want to deviate a little bit from that and, you know, they're supposed to go to the evil wizard's tower, they can go on this whole huge sidebar adventure that was completely unscripted and unplanned. And I make it up as I go, but I throw out just enough pieces of candy to pull them back onto track. So the players have a lot of wiggle room with what they do with their characters. Because some days, you know, you're going to work and you're like, I want to go to 7-Eleven. Mm-hmm. Well, you still have the end goal of getting to work. But what if 7-Eleven is closed? Oh, then your adventure is going to Chevron. I mean, it's not really that big of an adventure, but whatever. You know, so I do more of a guidepost thing. And when I heard this guy say, oh, you know, just go ahead and improv your entire game. Improv it all. I'm just... blows my fucking mind. Because improv is only great for young people, honestly, or older people who are, you know, really experienced in that. But improv and planning only work towards really specific personality types.
Yeah, there are some people that are very capable of full improv DMing. I think Doc Martin is actually one of those people. He's extremely good at just rolling. But like they've been saying, you know, he still kind of has a vague plan. He just doesn't fill out all the dots.
See, so he's guideposting.
He's very much guideposting. But at the same time, you can go too far off the other end. You can go the way that Youngin knows it all.
Oh, yeah. Youngin knows it all.
Yeah, that guy. When he was DMing for us, you know, in our little local group, he had 10 or 12 pages of content, but it was all, like, way very wide flowcharty. So the way he did it is he had as many possibilities as he could think of, you know, pinpointed out, so it was all, you know, finish coloring the drawing with, like, that last little bit of ink sort of thing. It led to some very rigid gameplay, because the main problem that can be found with that is that you lock yourself in a mindset, and you can't exactly be as flexible as being the storyteller requires of you, because your mind is so ordered that it just doesn't compute when something goes completely sideways that you know way that you never expected. It's a hard ball to play.
Does not compute.
Does not compute.
Well, something along those same lines, because Moniker is actually in one of my games I'm running, and you guys are level 2, and I've set up some pretty rigid structure for you guys, because it is literally the tutorial. I want to show you how I would like the game to run, and I've given you guys all the options to do your things. Like, their first adventure was goblins, quote-unquote, were harassing a town. Well, it turns out the goblins were innocents.
Of course they were.
So these not guys had goblins. The option. Not all goblins. These ones specifically were innocent.
Hashtag, not all goblins.
But so these guys did the thing I hoped they would do, but I gave them the option to be murder hobos, to do all this terrible stuff. It would have just had ramifications. Because I built that into my game. I want it done a certain way where I'm not just, oh, here's a bunch of encounters for all you murder hobos. No, they're actually developing story and they're making connections. You know, like our number one fan who is also in my game group, Jiggles. Yeah, you get another shout out, motherfucker. He's going the extra mile and like writing down people's names, where I'm just making up these side characters on the side because people are asking. And he's got connections and he knows people and he has info. And I really like that kind of stuff, but I'm allowing them to kind of make that up as they go. But I also have enough structure so that, oh, they're just wandering out in the woods. Cool, I've got a roll table for random encounters. All right, you guys find a wraith in the middle of these woods. Seems a little out of place, but there's background story to lead them into a possible side adventure from there.
I would think a more frightening creature to throw out in the forest right now would be like Captain Fungus Toes, Carol Danvers. I'm sorry, I've seen photographs of her feet lately, and I'm just like, ah, that could be an adventure on its own right. Slay that. Oh. At the same time, though, one of the other things, too, that makes it really difficult, when you plan stuff out, and if you're really big on planning, then you have all the information right there in front of you for everything, pretty much. Like, you're making up names right NPCs. Off the bat. NPCs right off the bat. And I could do another episode entirely on just how to make better NPCs based on that subject alone. But, no. Nah. Anyway, if, say, you're planning everything out, then you have all the PC names planned out, all the NPC names planned out, all the monsters' hit points, where the combat happens, if it's a special thing, you know, like, terrain does horrible things to players. On the other hand, though, if you're improving, you got to make all this shit up on the fly. How many books are there for Pathfinder Core right now?
Just bestiary-wise?
Exactly. What, you can't list the number right off the top of your head, though.
No, I had to look over at my shelf that has a bunch of your books on it.
Yeah, you got to look over at the shelf and be like, 1, 2, 2. Anyway, the point is, if you're improving, you have to memorize all this shit. You have to memorize, you got to know what the hit point difference between a forest troll and a frost troll is. Oh, if the characters are going to be fighting a red dragon this week and it's a young adult, you got to have that crap memorized beforehand, or at least a page number to reference it as the players go walking in the dungeon. If you're improving, it creates more work for you on the back end. I mean, sure, for storyline stuff, it's great. You know, if you're doing just a scene, you know, the players walk in, they meet the prince of the city. There's, you know, the Ventru Archon standing over to the side. You already know all these things. You already have all these personalities jumbled in your head. There's no numbers to have to work with. But at the same token, if combat breaks out and it's a mass combat, you whip out the battle map, how many points of health does the Gangrel sheriff have?
Exactly.
Exactly. You've got all these numbers and stuff, and you've got to keep all of this crap on the fly in your head ready to go. And another problem with that, too, is it can violate players' trust. Because the last time they fought the Gangrel sheriff, he only had 4 points of fortitude. Now he magically has 5, even though only 2 days have passed. You know, so some of the numbers get jumbled in your head. You know, if somebody uses a power like 3 months ago that you've totally forgotten about, and then suddenly you're back in another scenario that's similar, but you're like, oh no, this particular primogen doesn't have that power. Players are the ones who have good memories. They're going to be like, huh? What?
Which is actually another good thing, is something to ease a bit of strain off your own GM self, whether you're improving or hardcore structure. Best advice I was given at con was have a documenter, someone whose job it is to take down notes. Because not only does it help the players remember their own stuff, because I mean, I gave all my guys 10 pages of blank paper and was like, here you go, you take any notes you want. But in this next one, we had, I think it was Jiggles who brought in a notepad and was like, this is for game.
Yeah. Yeah, that was handy.
Yeah.
Really handy.
A notepad is one of the unsung friends of both GMs and players alike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another cool thing that I've seen used is, like, if you're going to have those monsters, either for the improv or the pre-planned style, 3x5 note cards has all the relevant information right there. You just go flip, 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 flip. you're facing that today. And you start doing the numbers. It's all nice, neat, and in one spot. And if you have any further details, you can just note on there, hey, this book, this page. Left side.
That gives me a great idea for like an arena combat style thing. You write down a bunch of monsters on 3x5 cards beforehand, shuffle them up, and then the players enter the arena, and you're just like, it could be CR10, it could be CR1. Random flip. Oh, you're just fighting a bugbear now. That would be so harsh, dude. So tense.
Dude. Here's my example is I created a random roll chart, 1 through 20. I just roll my GM D20, and it has several things that are around their ability. Has a number of certain ones, and it has something at the end that's above their level that has killed parties I've been a part of before. You remember the shambling?
Oh yes, round. I remember that.
Well, that's also comes with planning too. Is if you're planning ahead like you have done. If I roll a 20 and pull a shambling mound out of my ass and throw it at the party, okay, moniker. But if I pull it out, it also shows that not all fights will be balanced and fair, which is very true to real life. You could rear end a car, and who's going to get out of it? It could be a granny, or it could be a pissed-off 300-pound guy who's currently tweaking. You never know. It could be a fight that's in your advantage or their advantage. And in the realm of role-playing, when you pre-plan this stuff, you already know which fights are going to be unfair, but when you're not pre-planning it ahead and you're doing improv, you're doing a lot of tap dancing because if it's more powerful than the players, the GM is going to feel inclined to scale it down during combat ever so slightly and quietly because they fucked up. And they have to because, again, if I'm running a game improv and I pull a shambling mound out on a bunch of level ones and I think, oh, they'll be able to take it because they know the tactics to take it and just beats face, then I, as a GM, have just violated my player's trust.
Exactly.
Because I've just overwhelmed them on a whim. It wasn't by a chart that was set up for that campaign specifically.
Yeah, and with this, I mean,
and then some of those charts are not nice either. Yeah. The Wisp.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to shoot at something shiny.
Okay. In my defense, A, I was running a legit published module by Paizo. B, I was not the player who decided to fire an arrow at the Will-O-Wisp while you guys were all level 3.
Yeah.
C, when I look up the Will-O-Wisp's abilities and stuff, I did scale it back ever so slightly to give you guys a chance to run away, because even I read that and I'm like, who wrote this fucking module? And for anybody listening out there, Kingmaker is a great concept, horrible module.
I mean, it requires quite a bit of tweaking. I mean,
a lot of page flipping. Of going, like, when I'm creating it, the only time I flip pages that much is when I'm creating a character for Rifts and I'm building it out of, like, 6 or 7 different books. And that's a very complex character, I know, but to create the best of the best of the best of the best West Point with honors, sir, I need 7 books to create a character. 1, 2, 3. No, that don't cut it, dude. And then I need the big book of boom on the side, just in case. Because when it's time to gear up, I want
the big book of boom.
I want the big book of boom, yes. And when I'm running Kingmaker, which is just one module, you go...
It's not even the full arc of the module. It's just the first part.
Yeah, just the first part alone. And then when I look through the later parts, there was a lot of stuff that I would have to copy-paste or go further and, you know, take it down to, like, the local copy mart and copy pages out because there's so much book flipping. And this is like a little 60-page manual I'm flipping back and forth constantly, cross-referencing, cross-checking, or referencing another part of the book that it says to reference in another part of the book. And it slows the game down because the GM has to stop every 10 minutes and start flipping through the book all over again.
And basically find everything top start.
Wow. Yeah, it was a pain in the butt.
You know, I'm half surprised that your little pamphlet didn't just get shredded at the seam.
We went digital there for a while.
I mean, even then.
Oh, digital was even worse.
Scroll, scroll, scroll.
Scroll, 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 scroll.
Can I just take a second and say, fuck brownies and ghouls?
You weren't even there to fight the brownies.
They make me paranoid. They make me paranoid.
Remember, campers, leave out a few sweet treats for those brownies, otherwise they might come after you.
You know, I a funny story, actually.
I could have.
I was actually kicked out of Cub Scouts for eating a brownie. All right, back to the subject.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, encounters is a big one where you got to take that stuff into account is when you're planning it, you can be like, all right, I totally expect these group of level 6s to be able to handle half of the stuff on the CR6 table. right? Like, you've got the bestiaries out, and you're looking at the by CR, and you're just like, all right, these are all the CR6 stuff.
Again, CR is a guidepost, in my personal opinion, and a lot of other, like, really good GMs on YouTube share the same opinion, because there are creatures in there that are undervalued. There's a CR4 in there that should be at least a 7, or even worse, as you pull a Dullahan out of the party. Oh. Yeah. You're looking for a TPK if you are basing your choice just on CR alone. When you're looking up monsters, you need to scour those numbers and names and stuff and actually, like, look at their stats to be like, can my party take this CR4? I mean, they are level 4, but this special ability here could fuck them. And even worse is when you're playing intelligent creatures. And an improv or plan GM both can really ramp up the game at this point. I've personally done it with Troglodytes. You play them intelligently. They are intelligent creatures. They are going to plot and plan their attack. This is what part of what makes kobolds so scary. You know, you walk into a kobold warren, they know, they're fighting on home turf. They got the advantage, and they're already going to have plans to keep people out. But if you already have this pre-planned, then you know where the kobolds are going. That kobolds actually, you know, they would plan this stuff out, so it would be wise to have notes in advance. But if you're running kobolds freeform, you're just making up traps on the fly. Like, oh, I'm going to do everything I can to screw my players, but make it seem challenging. And again, players don't like it when somebody's running improv during combat situations, in my personal experience, anyway.
Yeah, you don't want to divert their expectations.
Yeah. Subvert their expectations?
Yeah, that.
Yeah. Yeah, because next thing you know, they're fighting this this gal who just lifts rocks all willy-nilly, even though, like, that's not what her powers are about, supposedly. Yeah.
The DM's looking at his players like, you think you're just going to take your little laser sword?
Let 3.5 die. It's time for 5.0.
Right. Oh, we're just going to skip right over 4.
You have no part in this.
Another fun note on intelligent enemies. There are a lot of creatures out there in whatever system. I'm sure it exists. But there's creatures that are hive-minded. So necessarily the creatures that you're fighting are on the very low end of it.
Phoenix elves.
Phoenix elves.
Sorry.
You're not sorry. No. Don't fucking lie. Or things like Zerg from StarCraft. That's a hive mind, yet all of their frontline troops are low level. Individually, they're not that bright, but as you start, like...
Amassing them,
one, they're very dangerous, and two, if there's a controlling mind for it, it can start doing really janky control over those units to exert and pull the fullest force of their power. And they will.
So they're kind of like the Geth. Individually, they're like preschoolers with learning disabilities. But the more of them you put together, the more powerful they get until they form Geth Voltron.
Yes.
And it is like Stephen Hawking with a working Adonis body and godlike powers and a hatred for humanity.
And bam, you have a villain.
Ha ha ha, now you die.
I don't know, magnets or something.
How do they work?
But you know what? You've heard a lot from us, Moniker. What do you think? Because you've played in a couple campaigns, right?
It's truth time here. The campaign I'm running with you right now, Blasphemous, is my first official campaign. Before that, I'd only had experience with a one shot.
Okay,
so I'm still pretty. I'll admit I'm still pretty new to this whole role playing. You know, Pathfinder, D&D, but, I mean, just what I've experienced so far, you know, even with, like, the players kind of going off course and having to improvise, I feel like the group I'm in, I'm really fortunate, because especially, you know, since they're all really experienced and they know what they're doing as opposed to myself, they can really kind of bring it back on track, and I feel like maybe it makes it easier on you.
Well, I think the group is pretty good, because you're the token FNG. And then there's Jiggles. And then we've got the two military guys. We had to swap out a player, real life aggro. So the two military guys, that's most of what they do in their free time is game in that situation. We've got our sorceress. She is kind of experienced. She's really good at the role playing aspect of her character.
Yeah.
And she freaks me the fuck out.
How?
Well, when she came in the game, she waved over towards me like, hi. I'm like, what the fuck? Don't wave at me. I'm busy.
But yeah, you know, I handpicked this group for the most part. And it's people who I felt that I knew could be more than regular on Saturdays because they're always hanging out at our local card shop. And I just thought it'd be fun to game with these guys. And I'm really glad that you're having at least some fun from what I've seen. Because I mean, oh, you're busting out the music. And you're without me having to go in and play songs, he's doing all this to make the game more interesting to everybody.
I like to think of myself, at least when I'm gaming, whether it be now role-playing or if I'm doing like 40K, I like to make myself the soundboard, you know? I just like atmosphere. So.
Just wait. Just wait.
Oh, boy.
Give it 5 years and you will hate gamers. And by 15 years, you'll despise them. You will become me, given your anger and darkness.
I mean, even when Kazarkan and me were playing in Goblin's campaign, you know, God, that was so much fun. Wasn't it you that busted out the battle music in that one fight?
The boss fight? Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Woo!
I'm glad someone liked that.
It doesn't matter if the GM has planned the game out or if he was winging it to that point. You know, if the players are having fun, that's what it means. That's when it comes down to the actual legitimate rules of the game. Fun first.
Yeah.
Then rules.
And can I say, like, even the part in the campaign, right before we entered the dungeon we are now in, when it really kind of started derailing and you had to literally just, you know, get out the crook and whoop us into the...
You mean when I unleashed the hounds?
Yeah, when you literally had to unleash the hounds, you still made it in a way that, to me, it still felt really natural. You know, it didn't... Like, to me, it didn't feel like, all right, point B, let's go. You know, it's just like, we were literally chased into this thing because we had a pack that came out of a misty woods. We could, you know...
Took down a construct, a clay golem.
Yeah, yeah, like, it still felt natural. And I actually felt the tenseness of the situation. It felt really palpable while playing. So it's like, I guess I'm trying to say, well done. Because it felt, like, really natural and it was fun.
And that's where improving can come in handy.
Exactly.
If you have a plan.
That's what I'm trying to say in so many words.
Yeah. Well, it's the same as when I first started gaming, I was doing a lot of improving, especially with Vampire the Masquerade. We were doing a Fomori game.
Yeah.
And my group ran into Extortion Smurf and a bunch of other Smurfs who were, Larceny Smurf, Jack Your Car Smurf. It was a lot of really bad Smurfs. And the werewolf group had wound up in a Pentex laboratory and had to fight a 50-foot woman who was actually, 50-foot tall Barbie. Ding! Trademark.
There it is.
Yeah, there had to be a trademark on that one. But they had to fight, the attack of the 50-foot tall woman in that one kind of deal. And it was a lot of winging it. The game was really memorable because it was a convention game. It's the problem with having like so many words in my skull trying to get out of my mouth at the same time. But it was a convention game. It was a one shot. And I winged it. There was a handful of strangers there. But at the same time, everybody had fun. And I walked in. And still, this is like early precursor guidepost. I knew I wanted to get the players to the Arctic Laboratory. I wanted the players to go through the Smurf Room. I wanted them to end with the 50-foot tall woman. And then I wanted them to blow the mainframe. Those were my big guideposts. It was the... getting them there, which was the space between the fingers. It's all willy-nilly. What do they do? Shit, just make it up. And it really worked as a wing-it kind of game. But I did another vampire game that was very political. And there was this big spider web of who liked who was allies with who didn't like who. There was no way in hell I could have, with all that information, just fucking winged it. To get the players to go through that game, it was more of the guidepost scenario. I wanted them to talk to this Primogen. I wanted them to go to the hospital to investigate it. I wanted them to talk to, the spook people who go out and do YouTube videos in haunted houses. These were the guideposts that I wanted the players to go through on their adventures, but it was a lot more tightly reined because there was more information. And so I think the point of all of this that I'm trying to say is that, when you're running a light and easy game, the less planning you do, the more room you have for improv. The more planning you have, the more structured it is probably going to be for a game that has a lot of excessive variables. Especially if you're doing a mass battle war campaign where you've got like 8 different kingdoms going at it. Try to improv that.
That's where the spell Entangle and Fireworks are your best friends.
Ah, that was a great deal of fun.
All this is making me realize... Sorry, Kazurkan. All this is making me realize I will never be a fucking GM because I am a perfectionist. And so I can see myself going for weeks writing out a campaign. Someone throws me one little ringer. I'm like... Break out the new character sheets.
Actually, that's a really good point, too. It's like... It doesn't matter what kind of GM you are. Yeah. You know, and a improv GM can actually roll with the punches better.
Yeah.
Than a plan GM. But players will always just... They'll run into your game. They'll be like, yeah, I'm excited to play. I've got this great thief that will work great in your campaign. I can't wait to play this. And you run through Absalom and, you know, just get involved in the politics and the sidebar stuff and be all roguish. And then you'll have another player who comes in the game and is like, I got a fucking monkey wrench. And so, you know, the king is holding court, and the next thing you see is a monkey wrench fly over the crowd right into your plot.
Right into the plot.
Disable plot device.
PCs have acquired spell. Disable plot device.
Exactly.
What do?
You know, I think a good GM will have the qualities to be able to do both. Improv and plan GMing. So, on that token, you know, if a player decides to throw that monkey wrench over the crowd, the GM is going to be more apt to be able to go, oh, I see what's going on here. Well, it turns out Bartholomew the Knight Errant has shown up and has seen you try to throw that disabled plot device and just ganks you in front of the king to earn more favor.
God damn it, Crazy Bart.
Damn it, it's Crazy Bart. But if the game is all plotted out, you know, that most games don't have deal with monkey wrench powers.
Yeah.
Like, it was funny, we were doing a game in Ustengrav, and, you know, it's the spooky, horrible place of the Pathfinder setting. You know, lots of undead, lots of ghosts, lots of icky nasties. And the enemy happened to be a rival faction of my character's religion. They were both evil religions, but mine was like, no, mine is the true religion. And the other one, of course, is, no, mine is the true religion. So, yeah.
Religious dick fights.
Religious dick fight. Well, my character had a any, so it was a clit versus dick.
There's a kink there.
But
going on.
Hey, I clit slapped him because he had a book that I wanted that he was going to destroy in the name of his god. But there was nothing in the module about this book of what would happen. Right.
Okay.
So the whole fight over this book, if a GM was to wing it, you know, I've encountered a guy, I gank him or he ganks me, the book does whatever, vanishes off screen, behind curtain, let's move on to the next scene. But if it's all planned out because this book was so super important to the overall structure of the game, and it's never supposed to wind up in the PC's hands, the GM now has to do everything he can by the book. And if he's not good at improv, he's got to find a way within the rules to stop me from getting a hold of that book. And the GM I had at the time really wasn't thinking on his feet because he was thinking more along the lines of the book. So it took like 2-3 game sessions of me chasing after this book and constantly running after the big bad evil guy, throwing knives and spells at it to try to get that damn book because I wanted it because the goddess demands that I have that book. Otherwise, I'd be a failure. I mean, this is religion here. Come on. I'm not going to give that up.
Right.
So a good GM, though.
You can make a religion out of that.
You can make a religion out of a religion. And yeah, I clit slapped that bad guy so many times, but he would just keep not dying because the book said that this guy can't die. Not until
plot armor.
Yeah, he had plot armor until certain book series, like page down the line. But I don't know this in character. In character, I don't know he has plot armor, so I'm going to keep going after this dude. I want that book. And, you know, a GM needs to know when to improv and also needs to know when to have stuff structured out. And he could have put it down, you know, that... Instead, this guy had a spell that was not listed in the book. He just said, oh, he has Gaia's quest. Cast that on my character when she's attacking him. And then next thing you know, she's on a quest to go look for a different book entirely and can't go after the book that he has until I get the one that I'm after.
Basically, you know, force a trade.
He could have forced a trade, and I would have been perfectly fine with that. It would have been totally off the wall, not scripted moment. Mm-hmm. Would have been improv as hell, but I would have worked with that because it would still work within the setting.
You know, I've got one to throw at you guys about improv or structure.
Okay.
All right, say you guys are getting a group together, right? You sit down and do character creation individually with your players because you can't get them all together at once right now. You've got player A who decides to be, I'm the good guy. I'm the paladin, lawful, good, fucking, I am the ultimate punisher of evil.
Lawful, stupid.
And then you've got player C who's like...
Chaotic me.
Yeah. You've got... Player C, who's like, oh, I'm totally going to be, you know, Billy Badass the bad guy, and I'm going to run with a chaotic evil fucking alignment, and I'm going to serve a demon You know, how do you do that when it's like, do you improv that, or you have to go in to your big framework structure build and find a way so that they can work together in the same party?
I would say no.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which one?
On the chaotic evil guy, primarily, maybe even the hero, but the problem that I have with that is it's so hard to deny somebody who wants to play a hero nowadays because they're so damn rare. D&D was a game, one of the first games to come out for role-playing, actually probably the first, back in 1974, and it wants you to be the hero. The game is pretty much scripted. You will go out and defeat evil for the greater good, and nowadays, all there is edgelords. You know, creepy... Everybody wants to be the edgelord, the creepy-ass bad dude, or whatever. So a guy who wants to play a paladin and do the right thing, if he has the mental clarity to play a paladin and not be super chaotic stupid about it, or lawful stupid... Sure, no brainer, but chaotic evil is one of those alignments, and people always play alignment
badly.
I wouldn't say badly, they just go to the extreme of the post. You know, it's either black or white. They never play the gray part of the middle. Neutral evil has a huge gray middle.
So you would say it's more of a spectrum?
Yeah, a spectrum of white, black, and gray with a huge gray swath. Because absolute evil and absolute good on either ends are very thin lines. And humans, you know, their morality just fills up that gray part all over the goddamn place. And when somebody plays chaotic evil, they typically go full chaos and full evil.
I feel like, you know, maybe, and again, I'm saying this as a noob here, but I feel like maybe, you know, the reason why heroes are becoming rare is because, I don't know, maybe there's an air of... If you were going to be, like, you know, a goody-two-shoes paladin, you feel like you have to play the Pope, you know? You have to be, like, this, you know...
Holier-than-thou.
Not just holier-than-thou, but also, you know, extraordinary benevolent and, you know, be kind of saccharine in your personality and stuff. And it's like, you know, have no flaws, I guess. And it's like, where I think you can bring in some of that gray area, especially for a lawful good, is, you know, it's like, maybe have them, you know... While you're adventuring, have that internal struggle come out, you know, through your adventures, you know, maybe it's like, I mean, shit, temptation's something we all deal with every day. Have that, you know, come into effect.
Imagine the King Arthur story where all the knights at the round table in the movie Excalibur are technically paladins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they all go through temptation in some way, shape, or form, and a lot of them fail on their quest for the Holy Grail.
Oh, Lancelot.
Oh, Lancelot. He gets all the... Okay, so...
What about you, Kaz? How would you handle this situation? Improv it or rigid wing it?
So, there's aspects to both camps. The first and foremost priority is, just like Goblin's concerns, chaotic evil and like, lawful good are very, one, opposed, and two, difficult to properly play on a player side. To get it, like Monica was saying... You know, the holier than thou and without flaw. Well, that's not how people are. Mm-hmm. And so they see this LG alignment and go, oh, that's what that must be. Lawful stupid, chaotic stupid. Those are the two extremes you're working with. Pretty much ball and nut.
And I would say chaotic evil wouldn't work in your game regardless, just by the fact that... I'm sorry to interrupt you here. I'll eat the jelly beans later.
You still have
they're right them? Yeah, they're right over there if Kazakin wants to be jelly beans for interrupting him. But the way people play chaotic evil, and if you already have a lawful good character who has already come in the game first, he's pretty much put himself higher in the queue for players already accepted in the game. And for another player to bring a diametrically opposed player in the game, you'd be like, I'm sorry, but that doesn't work in the setting. Mm-hmm. You know, you could always go default to, you know, the story is about this, this, and this, and your character is opposed to the setting diametrically. And it won't work in the long-term play style. Okay, sorry, Kaz.
So now, going back on this, if the CE player is capable of playing evil smart, Goblin being one of the only people that I've come across to cross this barrier successfully, it is not a problem because they are playing their character to the smartest that they're able, and they are more or less masking what they're doing from the holy stompy guy, mm-hmm. who invariably will be. Now, with that said, you do have to play the, well, does this fit the story? And for how long? Yes, you might be able to pull a wing it. You might be able to go, all right, here's the end goal for your patron, whoever that is. It happens to be that further down in his plans, or hers, or its, or whatever.
There.
In their plans is, well, accomplishing this quest will accomplish that goal. Or further me to it. Yeah, so it can be made to happen from that side. The trick of it then becomes getting your lawful stupid to play lawful smart, which is also another ball. And that's a very improv-y thing to do. At the same time, you can plot it with greater detail, saying that, look, yes, I know this guy's evil, however, he's currently serving the good, and therefore, until this quest is done, deal with it.
Improv your player into not being a dumbass.
Yeah. The way I've seen it in game and through my own gameplay, when it comes to alignment difficulties with other players, because some people are like, ooh, I want to play an evil campaign. Okay, cool. There's a setting that'll work with that. There's a way to play it. But when you've got everybody all over the map on the alignments and they're all playing basically chaotic me, it definitely makes it a lot harder to have a structured world. So improving there is the stronger suit. But at that point, you've really got to rein them in, which is why alignment's so hard. We were even told by John Wick himself.
John Wick!
Yeah.
Who stabbed me with a pencil.
But,
we have it on video.
Nice.
So what you got to do there, he said throw alignment out because no one ever follows it.
It's pretty much true because alignment, and the weird part is, and I've noticed this over the last 25 years, is when people write alignment down on their character sheet and then put all the stats and abilities and attributes down, they play their character like those two letters dictates all of the actions of their character. Mm-hmm. All of them. At the same token, but we know this isn't real. It's actually quite the opposite in real life. That your actions dictates
your alignment,
your morality, your alignment.
Sure.
And there are times where you will break that and you'll have to rectify it. I mean, like, a lady's driving down the street and her car gets rear-ended and instinct kicks over and say her kid was in the back seat. You know, the kid may have gotten a little bump on the noggin, but mom will flip the fuck out.
Full mama bear mode.
You know, there are times that, you know, my old man, he would just go off the fucking rails, which was completely out of personality for him. But given that, you know, it wasn't, oh, my father is, you know, lawful neutral. He's just going to flip out, you know, whenever the law is violated. No, he had personal issues too. And all player characters should have personalities before they include the alignment into that. Before they go, oh, these two letters dictates everything my character does. It should be personality dictates what the character does, not alignment. Alignment is a effect of personality, not vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One way I've seen looking at alignment that works really well, at least for everything I've seen locally, alignment should only affect the character where things that have alignment triggers are concerned. Spells like detect good and evil, detect law and chaos. Those two spells, they use that alignment keyword. Other than that, personality should govern it.
That's actually a really good form of thinking about it, is personality should come first, and you deal with the alignment as a mechanical aspect only. So only paladins who are lawful good in alignment can be paladins. But beyond that, you just hope that their personality allows them to act as a paladin. And if they violate their ethics and their codes and their morality, then, well, they're screwed. At the same token, a samurai could be evil. A samurai could be good. A samurai could be in between. Hell, a samurai could be chaotic. You take the Ronin, for example. They just wandered around getting into fights at the end of the Edo period, or I think it was the Edo period.
Miyamoto Musashi was a fun dude.
Yeah, Miyamoto Musashi was a fun dude. But at the same token, a samurai who, you know, we all take as being lawful to the T and honor is everything. Near the ass end of the dynasties, samurai were just wandering around all over the place aimlessly, just killing each other because they had nothing else to do. And that's pretty fucking chaotic.
Or, as in the medieval European aspect, knights originally were like super, you know, I am going to uphold the law and stuff. But as time went on and corruption, they ended up becoming chaotic, basically evil, because they ended up being hedge knights, just wandering around looking for the next job, and whoever paid them, they served.
Yeah, well, medieval knights were more like modern-day thugs and gangsters anyway.
Yeah, it really fractured into mercenaries. It was, I don't want to go on a tangent, but there's a... Do you guys know the anime Berserk?
I haven't
seen it yet.
You guys know Guts was actually based off of... Very loosely, but he was actually based off a real person.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and he actually was called Guts of the Iron Hand, and it was because of this man that we have the phrase, kiss my ass. the man was literally addicted to kidnapping people. The kingdoms in Germany would pay him lots of money to not kidnap people, like nobles and shit, and he would just do it anyway and get more money for it. This dude was a baller. Mozart even wrote a 5-piece
a cappella, just Lake Mishi Marsh. It's just 3 whole minutes of 5 dudes singing Kiss My Ass. Nice. Now, if that is an honor, I don't know what is.
Sorry. Okay, so now we are into Mozart writing a cappellas. And our theme for today's podcast is...
Improv!
Improv!
See, we improv into Mozart.
Hey, we improv this whole damn podcast.
Nothing by the book.
Yeah.
I am so surprised we haven't been banned already. But anyway. Yeah, so and that's another thing, too, is players should know how to also improv. I mean, if you throw alignment out the window, or just use it as a guide, because it really doesn't have any mechanical bearing anyway, beyond spells... Or some classes. You throw that out of the window and you're like, okay, play your character by a personality. Then they're actually having to wing it. The player's having to improv their character more so than normal. Because when they're running by alignment and stats and numbers and attributes, they're playing their character more as a series of numbers. And how do we all play numbers? The same way you do a math equation. You do it in order.
Unless you're me.
Unless you're Moniker, yes, who unleashes a torrent of butterflies upon us all.
Really? Butterflies? Not even moths?
Nah. And these aren't, like, really cool butterflies. These are, like, those ones...
Those little white ones you see in the springtime.
Yeah, the little pansy-ass white ones you see in the spring. They get caught in the dew in the morning and die. That's the Moniker superpower.
Is it a good time to point out I play a half-orc?
Oh my god, that's another thing.
But yeah, players who are playing characters, especially in games that don't have alignment systems, like most superhero games, they'll do this. Vampire does it to a degree with the way they got their system set up. But people who play personalities are more likely to improv their characters than place a bunch of stats.
ROLE players will play their character. ROLL players will play their stats.
It's true.
The most succinct way to put it, and
yeah.
That right there is the example between, on the player side, improv with the ROLE players, and the pre-structured players with the double L.
You gotta admit, though, that was ROLE play when I whipped out a kitten on the big bad evil guy.
That was friggin' brilliant.
Hey,
because nobody expects this badass murder motherfucker... to pull out a, like, 2-week-old kitten and go, you wouldn't hurt a kitten, would you?
I did that. Well, it was for Martine's birthday party, and I came out of retirement for just one game session, you know, because, hey, it's a birthday. And I looked at all the stuff there, and I'm like, I'm going to make the weakest character I can. And I made an intelligence build barbarian. So, like, the barbarian had all of his stuff in social and intelligence, and physical was just weak sauce. And we get into an arena, and one of the items I wanted paid for actually being there was, like, a kitten. So they delivered a kitten to me beforehand, and I already had this planned out. Like, an hour beforehand, I'm like, I'm going to need something that's just off the wall to, like, throw the enemies off guard, because I ain't going to win by raw physical brute force. So we get in the arena, the bad guy is chopping the crap out of us, and I reach behind myself and whip out a little kitten. I'm like, you wouldn't hurt a kitten now, would you? And the guy was stunned, because who brings a kitten into a death match?
Followed by, the what?
The what?
I just want to see that applied in real life, like in the Roman Colosseum. You know, the gladiators go in, this is my emotional support animal. Ah, shit!
Well, it wasn't my emotional support animal, but it became my buddy after that, because that kitten saved my life. But that's how you do improv in-game, you know, when you're a player. You just got to go... one of the best articles I've ever read was out of Vampire the Masquerade 2nd Edition Player's Handbook. It was How to Annoy Your GM and Get Away with It. Also known as the Creative Guide to Creative Combat. And that's exactly what I employed during the game session with my barbarian, is I just got creative with combat and just like, how do I fight something outside of the rules? And so I did. I took it outside of the book and I'm like, here's a kitten. I fight you with a kitten. The GM did not see that coming. The other players didn't see that coming. I was the only one who planned this out in advance. It's just kitten. Mew!
An intelligence-based barbarian. For some reason in my mind, that just makes me think of like a frickin' swole Kevin McAllister setting up all of his little Boy Scout traps, you know? And that's how he fights. He never raises an axe, but he just has all these goofy, you know,
A little paint can. Dunk.
Paint can to the face. It actually kind of came down to that, too. One of the fights, we were fighting a, I think it was like a half giant or something. And everybody else is, of course, going straight for hit points.
Yeah.
You know, that's typically D&D. You roll, you attack, you hit points, and that's it. And GMs have hated me over the years because I will do creative combat.
Achilles tendon.
Yeah, so that's what I did during their fighting a half giant. So the first thing I did is I run up and basically rogue maneuver behind it, which is for a barbarian, run like a little bitch. But I ran behind the thing and I'm like, called shot, Achilles tendon.
Uh-huh.
And it's a giant, so its Achilles tendon is like the size of my forearm, so it shouldn't be that hard to hit. And so I start going after the tendons, and I was an intelligence-based barbarian with some healing skill, so I knew the weak points to hit, so I was going for the joints. I was like, okay, now I go for the inner arm on the front side to take out the shoulder. And so now its club arm was disabled, so I was just, every turn, disable one leg, disable next leg, disable arm, and just piecemeal combating it, so it didn't matter what hit points it had. It was turning into a giant jellyfish with a club.
It worked.
But there's most games don't have rules for that, though.
Yes, and like this is another really good example of where improv can be a useful thing. Because most systems don't have a really good way to do piecemeal combat like this, an improv player or an improv DM will be able to be like, all right, you managed to cut one of his Achilles tendons. He loses some movement.
Yeah, his movement is reduced slower. By 10. Yeah. You know, so now he's limping around or whatever. Yeah, you could, and also when you're improvising too, it's not just the knowledge you need in the books. Like the earlier example I made with Dark Blasphemous, how many core books are there for Pathfinder? Or if you're doing Vampire Second Edition, how many books are in that? Or if you're doing Rifts, holy shit.
How many libraries
do you have? This is a lot of stuff to remember. But not only do you have to remember the stuff in the books, you also have to remember real life stuff. If I attack one of his NPCs with Curari and he's never heard of it, how is he going to rectify that if he's an improv GM? You know, if I run up and I'm like, oh yeah, you attacked me with such and such dude, but I'm playing a poisoner, I just hit him with some Curari. If he's an improv GM primarily and is not looked up that poison or how it works, it's going to throw him through a loop. I've done this in one of the games, and I just couldn't believe the GM actually asked, what's that? Okay, when the GM asked that question, you know the player's got him in a corner. Because I pulled the same crap on an owlbear. I ran behind an owlbear with a freaking axe, and I'm like, I chop it in the back of the knee right above the Achilles tendon. Have you ever been hit in the back of the knee?
It sucks.
It sucks balls.
Just instant Charlie horse, just boom.
Yeah. It's just, if anybody wants to know what it feels like to get hit behind the knees, go find yourself a friend who's got a stick or a cane or something, and just let them take a baseball swing at the back of your knees lightly. That's just enough to do it. And we'll see how fast you drop to your knees. But yeah, I run behind this big-ass monster with a similar skeletal structure, hit it with an axe, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going for, you know, a chop to the back of the knee to disable its leg. And the GM is like, well, what do you mean? I was like, I'm going for the hamstring. And he's like, what's that? Wait, how can you not know what hamstringing is?
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I've had GMs who also do improv. And I was like, we were fighting one dude. And I ran up and I was playing a druid. So I got claws. I got my Catman claws. Catman. And I run up to the enemy and I'm like, yeah, I initiate a grapple and gobbet rend. The GM knew what a gobbet rend was. He knew exactly what I was doing. He's like, ooh, that's lethal. And I'm like, that's what I'm trying for. So if you're an improv GM, you've got to have a lot of knowledge about crazy shit, especially with concerning players and their abilities to disable devices.
Funny story about that. You can all, like, this doesn't just mean, like, a little bit of biology. It also means, like, physics. Because I've had players go, I want to knock over that tower. Okay, how are you going to do that? I'm going to take out this one leg and then uproot the other end. By just tilting the earth. Magic, I've got shape earth, I can do that. Okay. There goes the tower. Now, how does that affect the game world? Because I guarantee you there's no stats for a falling water tower.
Yeah, there's no stat. Again, that's creative combat, thinking outside the box. What's the difficulty and damage of a falling water tower on my enemy?
Or casting create water inside a sealed glass jar. How much damage will that do when it's a 1-pint glass jar that's been had the mouth melted shut, and you create 6 to 8 gallons of water inside it?
This end towards the enemy.
Yeah, this end towards enemy. Exactly, and you know, with a with a GM who's got to do improv, this stuff becomes a lot more important. You know, knowledge of physics, science, mathematics, biology, basic fighting techniques that are pulled on the street, you know, like, I could just, there's a GM out there somewhere, and I could yell, you know, oh, I'm going to do a Russian leg sweep on the enemy. And I'm guaranteed there will be GMs out there who have been doing it for at least 10 years who will be like, a what? You foot sweep them? And you're like, no, I do a Russian leg sweep. The end result is the same. Pulling off the maneuver is different. But the GM will just be like, derp, because they don't really know about these techniques or whatnot. So, I mean, like, me running high-speed guard chases, I admit that's my weakness. Because we all know how far I drive. Our listeners don't, but to give our
He's
listeners...
He's got a Batamobile.
I got a Rolls Canardly. Rolls down one hill, can hardly get up the next. Has the word Matchbox printed on the bottom. But yeah, doing high-speed car chases is not my strong suit. But I know enough people who have done lots of driving, you know, that if I need to, I'd be like, hey, is this a legitimate maneuver you can pull off in an Acura? You know, there's just some stuff that you can and can't, you know. And when you don't know it, pray that you have somebody who on speed dial or at least in the game group who can, you know, nod or shake their head to let you know instead of going, I don't know. It actually, for a GM, it actually shows that you are willing to improve at the game table. Same with the owlbear incident that I just described, you know, the GM just flat, I don't know, made a rules call and we continued along. And I, as a player, go, you know what hamstringing does to a creature that has an Achilles tendon, right? He's like, no. Didn't even lose any speed, just lost a few hit points and kept attacking. And I'm just like, I successfully pulled off a called attack to a specific portion of the body that should disable it. And it's fighting still at full strength. Now, some GMs, you know, when they're improvising, they should be more along the lines of, okay, well, tell me how this this maneuver you're doing would work, you know, and have like a small mini discussion about it during combat, you know, just take like maybe 30 to 45 seconds, a minute if need be, let everybody chime in their thoughts about it. Yeah. And show that you as a GM are willing to improv better. You know, show that you're willing to take the information as it's given because this is a new situation, but it'll help you as a GM later down the road adjust. So 2-3 years down the road, if somebody else decides to try the exact same thing on an enemy, you'll be like, aha, I know where you're going with this.
And, like, you know, you can involve your players with a few things on this. Like, I want to do this. Okay, what's your goal with that? And what are you doing to accomplish that? Those are two very good questions for a DM to ask, because that can get all the information you actually need to start improving it with those two questions, if they're answered by the players and the group as a whole.
Well, I think I've taken up a lot of this podcast, and I've just looked at the time. I think our listeners are going to want to listen to something else now. Any final thoughts, gentlemen? Well, that's a hell of a thought there, dude.
Yeah. I'm going to say, have a plan, but be flexible. Read your books, be knowledgeable, whether you're a GM or a player, be ready to just come out of left field with a plan when you have to, or want to.
Don't be a perfectionist, I guess.
I would say, you know, when you're designing your game or you're looking at setting something up, a combination of both elements would work the best. Don't look at the whole situation as a dichotomy, where there's only improv or only planning ahead, but merge the two together and find a common balance ground between both of those and plan as much as you need to. But leave room for your players to also just explore and be player characters.
And totally. Give you the lore for you. Yeah.
That's a really good thought, dude.
Well, I'm working on it.
Oh, you're working on it.
The main thing with DMing is that combination of the crafting the world, crafting the scene, and crafting the story. And you need some parts of planning for all three of those, and other parts you need to be flexible. You can't exactly make a piece of glass clockwork. It doesn't work. But you can make a piece of clockwork that can do all sorts of crazy fluid things with the right amount of planning and the flexibility to adapt.
Or as, yeah, Sebastian Shaw would say, adapt Shaw. To this.
Shaw.
Shaw. She's letter S, man.
Are you worrying about syllables?
All right, I think we're good, everybody. We will catch you on the fly next time.
That's right. Blunt Force Gamers out.
Later.
Peace. Au revoir. Mama, 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 mama